This episode is brought to you by the 1-4 Group Incorporated, a leading supplier of innovative dormancy and sprout inhibiting products for the potato storage industry. They believe that sustainability is intrinsically linked with the concept of stewardship. 1-4 Group practices sustainability by helping farmers minimize product loss using their family of biocontrol products. Learn more at 1-4group.com.
Welcome to the Potato Field with Spudman. I am your host, Zeke Jennings, editor of Spudman Magazine. Joining me today is a father-daughter growing team out of Colorado, Harry and Amber Strohauer of Strohauer Farms. Welcome, Harry and Amber. I really appreciate you being here.
Thank you. We appreciate it.
We're excited.
Good. Let's start off with kind of a brief overview of your farm. How long have you guys been around, and what do you grow in the way of potatoes?
So, I started farming, my first year was 1975. My father passed away and I was still in high school and didn't want to miss the opportunity. So I quit high school and started farming.
Wow, you quit high school and then,
yeah.
Wow, that's baptism by fire. I mean, I'm sure you were familiar with the farming, but to have that, that's a lot of pressure.
You know, I think I was being groomed for it when I was growing up because that was my passion. I was always doing it. I would probably, what would be appropriate, is ditch school as often as I could to drive tractor and things. So it wasn't that big of a deal to me. I mean, it was an instant decision. But so I grew up and we grew potatoes. My father and uncle were partners. And potatoes were always a part of our operation, and it quickly became a passion of mine.
So, and what do you guys grow in the way of potatoes currently?
So we're growing conventional and organic, russets, reds, Yukons, and all the different varieties of fingerlings.
Okay.
I shouldn't say all the different, but red, purple, and yellow fingerlings also, both conventional and organic.
And what do you guys do besides potatoes? Like what are your rotational crops or other cash crops that you do?
So we used to grow a lot of onions, and we're blessed to live in Weld County that is known for hail. It's one of the, if not, I considered one of the worst counties in the U.S. for hail. And it seemed like onions were a hail magnet. I mean, we could spread them out however we wanted to and still get hail. So we consolidated on our onion acreage and we were doing the pearls and shallots, and now we further consolidated. And right now we're pretty much just doing shallots and conventionally at the moment. Our other crops are corn, wheat, hay, some triticale, and that's about it.
How do the shallots work as a rotational crop? Because I've heard onions is a pretty good rotational crop for potatoes. What do you guys think?
Yes and no. Actually, we don't rotate any of our potato acreage here with shallots because all our potato acreage is under sprinkler. And all our shallot irrigation, all our shallot acreage is under irrigation, flood irrigation.
Okay.
So.
I can't really answer that one then.
But we do have a lot of cover crops that we're doing and rotating out with.
Well, yeah, all our organic crops are rotated with the cover crop prior to planting. Mm-hmm. I mean, we have our rotation that we do with organics, but
yeah, and it's kind of a blend of a whole bunch of things. You wouldn't think having this much diversity would even be something you'd be practicing all the time, but our blend is pretty wide array. We've got like hairy vetch, red clover, peas, beets, turnips, legumes, hay.
Yeah,
there's a whole bunch of stuff.
Wow. That's really interesting. How did you guys kind of settle on that mix of things? It's just experimenting over time to see what worked?
We did. A lot of our organic ground came to play because we were short on water. And so a lot of this naturally happened for us. Getting into organics was based on the shortage of water a little bit. And then we're short on organic ground. So we are rotating every other year with potatoes thus far and been very successful with that. But the off year of potatoes, we really don't try to get a crop out of it. We're putting in our cover crop and we'll put wheat in, but more so just to build up the soil. And so we're really only expecting to get income off of the organic ground every other year, pretty much.
Well, that's really interesting. That's a short rotation, but like you said, it's, you're really going all in that one off year.
Right. Right. And we've had some great results on, for nematodes. I mean, yeah. Nematodes are a huge problem around here and we've had great control and obviously the biggest challenge on organics is having the nitrate and we've had some good success with it. So.
You guys are located in Northern Colorado, north of Denver. Everybody's familiar with the San Luis Valley is a big growing region. What's the region like where you guys are, and what kind of growing season and climate do you deal with? You mentioned the hail already.
Yeah, so we're 3 weeks to a month earlier, probably 3 weeks earlier than the San Luis Valley, typically. And so it's warmer up here. There used to be a lot of potatoes grown in Northern Colorado. And in fact, I mean, in my lifetime of farming, there was 60, 70 growers in this area. And we're the only one located straight north of Denver. And then there's 3 to 4 growers in Eastern Colorado that's in the same district as us. But Colorado is divided through a marketing order and everything in 2 different areas. It's Area 2, which is San Luis Valley, and then Area 3 is Northern Colorado. And it was done that way because the two areas are so much different in timing and somewhat varieties and everything. So it was done that way years and years ago.
Mm-hmm. And I like to tell people, I mean, he said 60 to 70 growers in kind of this Greeley perimeter area. I mean, that was the case. There were about 64 potato growers when I was 10 years old in this area. So major, major difference. And actually, in the like early 1900s, this area, it might not be the largest, but it was definitely one of the largest potato producing areas in the nation. So we've seen a massive shift on that end.
Right.
A lot of history here, though. We still have this Greeley Centennial Potato Days here. The history here is with potatoes.
The rodeo used to be called the Spud Rodeo. They used to have a softball team, and it was the Greeley Spuds. A lot of history in this area with potatoes.
That's interesting that you guys are, there's so few growers left. What, any thoughts on as to why? Is it because of the water issue? Or
the major player on it was the water issue.
Okay.
This area was always a transition area. So you had buyers that were going from area to area on needs. And so we fit into the need of August. I mean, that's traditionally when potatoes were going to retail was the month of August out of here in the first half of September. As the buyers started just dealing with the same people year round, then this area needed to work with different operations out of San Luis Valley more so that, you know, because they were storing clear up until midsummer. And so as that shift happened, you started seeing more and more sheds. I mean, there used to be, I don't know, 8, 9, 10 sheds that packed potatoes around here. And they just started decreasing because they just didn't fit into the marketplace. And so it was the ones that started partnering with operations in the San Luis Valley or got creative in some way. Mm-hmm. But the water played a huge issue in it. And that's why we made our move even to a different location was in around 2012, it just got so bad around here to have positive water that we had to do something. So.
Mm-hmm. And that's really why we got into the fingerlings and organics. I mean, we couldn't grow crops in this area in mass amounts. You couldn't have conventional russets really be viable. And so going the specialty route, and at the time when you did that, which would have been 2006,
right?
I would say Whole Foods was your first really interested retailer in the fingerlings, and they wanted organics. And so that's kind of what transitioned our operation. And now it's kind of in our blood, and we do a lot of things so differently than we even did 10 years ago.
Right.
What were the biggest challenges to, you know, you're traditionally growing conventional like everybody else does, and then now all of a sudden you're into this different way of growing potatoes. What did you guys have to do to kind of get up to speed and start growing organic?
It was a real challenge. I mean, and you know, every year, I think the organic industry gets I'm torn whether it gets easier or not, because there's more and more products that are available out there in our toolbox to use. I mean, when we first, and we're kind of young still, I mean, we're 15, 16 years in the organic industry, but there weren't a lot of tools to use. I mean, you just didn't have a lot of things. I mean, we were struggling with controlling insect pressure, and Colorado potato beetle isn't an insect pressure that Colorado typically has, but boy, we put organic potatoes out there and we sure found them. And nematodes were an issue, and keeping the fertility up was an issue, but there were more and more products every year. With that said, what we could sell back when we first started organic potatoes, you know, it may have not looked quite as good. Maybe it had a little more silver scurf, or maybe a little more misshape back then on the organic, because we didn't have a lot of tools to use on it. And now I think we're held to a higher standard on our organics than we are on our conventional. It has really shifted. And you know, there's a certainly it's, you know, higher priced product that we're shipping out organically, but we sort our organics harder than we do our conventional anymore.
Mm-hmm. Wow. They're paying that premium price, but they want it to be nice and pretty.
The one aspect that has really, I would say, been a benefit to the potato industry, specifically in organics, during this pandemic, when a lot of stuff has been extremely unfortunate for people. Number twos, there is a huge area now where people are interested in utilizing imperfects and number twos. And for the organics, that's really helpful when we're sorting out some of those. We can at least have some outlets that really weren't as available as they have been in the last few years, specifically this year. I think this year we saw a huge spike in consumers being willing to go in the imperfect route.
When it comes to organics, is there much of a market? Where do you typically how do you grow your market there and find your customers? Do they kind of come to you, or do you have to really scout?
It's a combination of both.
Yeah.
I mean, we're trying to be out there as much as possible through our networking and everything. And I mean, we're blessed to be close to Denver here. And, they talked about Boulder being more of the organic neighborhood or area. I mean, that's, I think, where alfalfa's originally originated. And so there's a lot of history with organics in this area. And then to be associated so close to Denver, we get a lot of market share in the Denver area itself. But certainly, we market all across the U.S. and try to be as visible as we can. And we hope that our product speaks for itself, too. Try to do a good job.
Do you struggle with black spot or pressure bruise in your potato crop? The proven biocontrol 1-4 site helps increase deliverables to your shed or plant by reducing the severity and indices of bruise. Incorporate 1-4 site into your existing storage program for unprecedented success. Learn more at 14group.com. And now back to the podcast.
When you run into a conventional grower, which I'm, you know, you guys are out there and at meetings and all kinds of stuff, I'm sure it happens all the time. And do conventional growers that don't have any experience with organics, they like to pick your brain? I mean, what do you typically hear from them?
Yeah, I mean, there's quite a few growers over the years that have questioned what we're doing organically or started up doing some organics also. And, you know, I've always shared what we're doing. It's brutal when you start and you don't know which way to turn sometimes. I mean, I hope that that we thrive on our own marketing and our own skills and not trying to hold somebody else back that wants to. But it's been well received, and we're still, we grow a lot more conventional potatoes than we do organic. Mm-hmm. And so we're it's nice to be in both areas. I've always said I believe that our conventional potatoes are every bit as healthy to us as the organic are, but I understand other people don't view it that way or see it that way, and mm-hmm. we want to be there to provide for them however they think their eating habits need to be for them. We want to be there.
Yeah, and I think not so much with other growers, but with the general public, you have such a misconception out there that farmers are destroying the soil, and the soil is our most valuable resource. It's our legacy. It's everything. And so, I think no matter if you're an organic or a conventional grower, you know, the soil health and caring for it, it's the passion of every farmer. So I do think we share a lot of common ground on that, but yet it's hard to sometimes get that story out. I do think as farmers, we struggle with communicating how we truly do take care of our land and resources, and the innovation we have going on and the different practices we continue to try and implement. You know, I think after World War II, farmers kind of came in to really help and produce enough food for everyone. And now you have so many people coming at farmers like they're the bad guys. And I wish that there was more of a cooperative effort to work together.
No, absolutely. And that's a great point. And the thing that I continually hear is that the percentage of people who are in agriculture is shrinking and shrinking and shrinking. And there's just that disconnect between agriculture and just the general public. And that's so important that we do get the stories out there and share what you guys are doing. I mean, you mentioned how hard you're hitting that one off your potatoes, and there's a lot of financial investment that goes into making that soil healthy, but it's important you to make that soil healthy.
Right. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's where we've always been at. We've wanted to share our story. I mean, that is, people want to know where their food comes from, I think, more all the time. People like local, but I think it's more important to people, if it's not local, to know who it's coming from, where it's coming from. And so we've tried to provide that. And in the organic realm, much more so when we first got into it, a lot of people viewed, if you were producing organic, that a lot of people's perception was you were doing it on a very small scale, which we were in the beginning. But they don't believe that you can really operate a very large operation organically. And that's been a public perception. But as organics have become more and more popular, you don't have enough people to do it on a very small scale. And some of the retailers that we deal with, I mean, we get an order after lunch and it has to be delivered that night yet. Mm-hmm. And you have to be well set up to do those things. And so we are still a family farm. We are not a huge operation. But so we've got that small family feeling, but yet we can put things together very quickly. We have all the tools and resources do everything that we're asked of from any of the retailers that we work with.
And on the logistics and the distribution part of things, what's the setup with your storage and your packing sheds and your whole distribution?
Well, yes, we do store our potatoes here in Northern Colorado, and our packing warehouse is based in LaSalle here. And we are delivering into Denver every week, multiple times. And one thing I love about this location is we have, specifically on a lot of our organic ground here, we will actually grow like, all of our varieties on certain fields. And it allows during fresh crop harvest, the ability to really harvest just what we need for next delivery. And so our customers are getting sometimes crop within 24 hours. So I think that's something that makes this area about growing here, while it has so many challenges, like that's the really fun, cool aspect. And anything you want to add on that?
All of our organic potatoes in the month of August and September are dug within a day or two of when they go out. And so we're only digging according to orders. And it's pretty, when it's Denver deliveries, it could be dug at 3 o'clock that afternoon and be in their hands at midnight.
Mm-hmm. Does that make any challenges like with yields or, I mean, cause a lot of times you want to let the potato reach a certain point, that requires a lot of flexibility.
You know, the challenging part is to match the different varieties to try to have them all about the same timing. And as Amber said, we'll put russet, red, Yukon, and all three colors of fingerlings in the same field and try to have the maturity date of them all about the same. And so that we can have that same field and pull in there and dig any of those varieties. And it's just in maybe, quarter circle, half circle, and it doesn't take us very long to go through those, and then we go to the next one. So we're planting them staggered, so they're we don't want to kill the vines and have them ready and laying there for weeks at a time. So we're trying to have them as fresh as we can. That's a challenge, and the people that are running the planters, when we have to do multiple varieties in every field and they're cleaning out the planters, and same way when we're cutting seed, they have to keep changing. We're not real popular at those times because it's a huge challenge for everyone. But our whole team has a buy-in on this. We have an agenda that we're trying to do, and everybody understands it.
And on the team aspect, especially for me being this next generation, it's been really cool because most of our team I've grown up with. They've been here since I was a child, even though our packing warehouse hasn't been quite as long. I mean, most of the crew has been there since we opened. And even when we're packing potatoes, pretty much we have it where everyone has their specialty and where they're an expert in. And so from a QA perspective, and I mean, people are very passionate about what they're shipping out and how the job they're doing. So I love that aspect. I do think we have a lot of buy-in from our team and that they work extremely hard. And yes, being a family farm, it always seems like we're short staffed, so all hands on deck. And that's a great feeling when everyone's working together and doing whatever needs to be done.
I think we feel pride in this past year. I mean, the potato industry stepped up to the plate when they needed to this past year with the pandemic, and everybody worked together, and we sure didn't miss a beat the whole year. I mean, our whole team got out there and we did what we had to do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. A lot of people I talk to, they may specialize in, like, they just grow processing russets, or they may just grow fresh pack. You guys are doing the gambit, including the specialty. What are some of the advantages or disadvantages of doing some of the smaller specialty varieties?
You know, it's a challenge. I mean, our shed has to change varieties multiple times a day. And every time you do that to clear everything out, takes time. And then to throw in doing organic and conventional in that realm. And, you know, we're trying to only run organics for a run a certain time and then do conventional, and we have to sanitize and be careful of all those things. So it's not so much of a challenge. I mean, we figured that out. It's just that it takes time. It takes time to run all the product through. One thing we pride our shed on is we can do multiple things at one time. I mean, we'll be bagging fingerlings and boxing Yukons and putting shallots in bags. And I mean, we do a lot of different things at one time for a smaller shed.
Mm-hmm. And what I love about the fingerlings, especially right now, you have a lot of meal kits popping up and people cooking at home, but not wanting to have a russet in the oven for an hour or more. And so the fingerlings are an item where you're not peeling them. You're getting the nutrients in the skin, and they're super easy and fast to cook. So you're reducing that cook time. And usually, yeah, they're coming in a whole bunch of colors, and you're getting more product. So and a lot of these meal delivery kits, they love fingerlings because it's just exactly what a consumer in that realm loves. And so I think that's been really nice to see, because we're super passionate about fingerlings, but it's really cool when the market is starting to have that same sense. And that's really made actually the last couple of years pretty fun in the shed. We try to grow different varieties and kind of promote them, like choose your fingerling like you choose your wine. Like, they all have their own unique profile. And there's fun names, you know, Purple Fiesta, Magic Molly, lots of cool stuff.
And how do you guys stay up on that market to decide, you know, what you're going to experiment with or what you might try to grow to meet that market need as it comes?
Well, you know, a lot of it is the history of the previous year, for one. I mean, if people are reaching out for more of one thing, and then as we talked a while ago, I mean, as far as putting all those varieties in one field, one of the biggest challenges is deciding the acreage of each one of those, because you're trying to be done with each one of those at about the same time. And so we really key on what we sold the past year, what we didn't have enough of, or what the Amber keeps up on what's out there, what are people calling of, you know, wanting more of. And then I watch the different varieties and what's out there that, maybe isn't more as much prone to silver scurf, or, you know, just variety specific things. So both in the marketing end of it, you're keeping up on those things. And from the growing side, I'm just watching the varieties and the products and the things available to try to stay in tune with customer demand.
The silver scurf is probably our hardest thing to control organically.
It's our number one.
Oh, that's good to know. Sure, our crop protection friends would like to hear that, so maybe they could get to work on that.
I tell them all the time, and unfortunately, if they ever figure out something that'll control scurf organically better than what we have now, it'll probably cost us a fortune, because I've told them to go for it, do whatever you have to do, but it is our costliest thing on growing organics.
Yes. Switching gears a little bit, from a broader perspective, Harry, I know you've always been involved in the National Potato Council. I know you guys are involved in like Western Growers. What are some of the biggest issues that you feel like are facing growers in your region and nationally? I mean, I know water is already an issue. You've mentioned that already, but what are some of the other things that you guys are really, you think growers are really struggling with?
Well, yes, so as you mentioned, water was number one here, and it's still a struggle, and that's what's kept us from growing any bigger than we have, or the growth rate we've had is water. So that's huge. Labor is always a huge issue. We've been in the H2A program, and we're a youngin' on that. We've only been in it 4 or 5 years. Mm-hmm. Maybe 5 years.
I think five, yeah.
Yeah, and that's been fantastic. Yeah. It comes at a cost. But it's so refreshing to have people that show up every morning. They actually show up and they actually want to work and they're grateful. And we have just had tremendous success with the H2A program.
Can I make a note on that? Because I think a lot of people bring in H2A from different countries. We bring a lot of people in from Ukraine. And really? they have a lot of potato experience typically. And it's been really great for us in that aspect.
Did you guys have any struggles in 2020 in getting people cleared and stuff?
We were really close. We brought in the people we needed for the springtime right before they shut things down. And within the first couple of days in the summertime of where we could bring them in, we started harvest right after that. So it couldn't have been cut any closer than how it was. But yeah, we did not experience any struggle, but it was as close as you could get.
Good. Anything else to add on just kind of the issues facing growers? I mean, I'm sure regulations are always front of mind, and that's always a little unpredictable, but is there anything else you can think of?
You know, just the environmental issues hitting us and the fear of, as we change administrations all the time. I mean, each one's got their views and with the new administration, there's certainly fear of some of the environmental issues that might come down to us right now. So it's not being able to predict it. It's the fear of what's coming at us next. And sometimes it feels like you're getting hit on one side with something and then you're getting body slammed on the other side with something. Yeah. It's the environmental regulations that are coming down the pipeline that certainly we're trying to predict as well as we can. But there's some fear in some of that.
I will say that we are lucky in our area to be where we are. I think Colorado Fruit and Veggie Growers, they do an amazing job advocating for their growers, and Western Growers obviously is so great for that. And, you know, Colorado being in their region and New Mexico. So we're really fortunate in that regard when it comes to this new administration and what changes are coming down the pipeline. Colorado's going through a lot of political changes right now. So it'll be interesting to see.
Yeah, your state, not to go too deep into politics, but I mean, I just, you know, watching from afar that the landscape in Colorado, I think, has transitioned a lot in the last decade or so, just in kind of leaning right versus leaning left. So I'm sure you can, you know, that keeps everybody on their toes.
Mm-hmm. And oil and gas, that has also really affected agriculture in this area. That would be another big player on just, I think, people also kind of getting out of farming even, would you say?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we talked a little bit already about, you know, sharing your story, that's such a big thing for farmers. And you know, it's kind of preemptive too of what we're just talking about. The more farmers can get their story out there and show that they are being sustainable, the better it's going to be for the industry. You guys have a really strong social media presence. Amber is constantly out there on TV shows or doing radio spots or all kinds of stuff. How is that presence of getting yourself out there and being vocal and being visible, how is that come about, and was that something that you guys consciously tried to do?
Well, maybe I'll take this one. I do think, so one thing you're seeing in the industry, ag as a whole, is you have fewer and fewer growers. I think the margins are definitely less in growing, and so you see a lot of repacking and marketing and distribution. And I feel so passionate about us being a grower. And I mean, my dad, I love being around my dad farming and he loves it. And I think some of the marketing pieces came from a place of wanting to share that and wanting to share it from a personal place with the hope that we, especially from a food security standpoint in this country, I don't want to see the growing side go away. And it does have a lot of challenges. A lot of times it's not a great ROI, and I get all of that. And so I'm trying to show why are farmers not crazy? We're continuing to do what they do every day. And that's where it comes from. And I also love working with chefs. And like we've talked about, Denver and Boulder, Longmont, Fort Collins, we have these massive chef scenes, and I love being around them. So probably just hanging out with friends and stuff has kind of created some of the content that we end up putting out there. But it gives us an opportunity to talk about where their food is coming from and build that connection.
That would be a good transition into Potato Expo Cook-Off. You guys participated in that. There was, just for people that aren't familiar with it, Potato Expo was, she's been almost 2 months now, but there was like a big cookout and we did it virtually, and people made all these different dishes and you guys participated in it. What did you make and where did the recipe come from?
Okay, so this was amazing because my sister now works at the farm. She's a year younger than me, and I was able to get my sister and both my parents involved in our cook-off. And the cook-off was fun because it was potato croquettes. And kind of in the hours leading up to it, especially my mom, she was like going through the fridge, pulling out stuff. And we're like, what can we maybe make with this? And we came up with like three different ideas. Like we had like a tots and shots, which was like a cheesy potato croquette with like a potato vodka. And then we had an Italian version with like basil, tomato. And then we made one that we called our signature, and it was sauteed shallots, garlic, mushrooms, blue cheese. But with croquettes, we have decided that it all comes down to the dip. You have to have an awesome dip. And RJ, he is amazing at that. I love following him on social media because he's all about potato dips, and he makes so many good things. So yeah, that was fun, right?
Yep.
Yeah, it was intense though. It was kind of hard and like, you know.
I was a good observer.
Well, thankfully you had the potato vodka to take the edge off.
Yeah, exactly. Especially afterwards.
Yeah, I'm sure. At least the good thing was at the end of the day. So.
Yeah.
I loved that though. That was such a great way to get people involved with the expo, and that was done so well. We were really impressed with the virtual expo because it's definitely hard to do that virtually in any industry, but especially with farmers, and they did a great job.
Well, I was widely impressed with that. I'm sorry, Harry, did you have something?
Well, I was going to say, and they pulled that off during the deal going on in DC when the Capitol was.
Oh, right.
And so the MPC did an incredible job with that.
Mm-hmm. A lot of blood, sweat, and tears went into that. I know I was working with them a little bit. We did like this digital guide for them, and I was coordinating with them kind of like the week in between Christmas and New Year's, and they were at it. They were at it. So they did a good job.
Yeah, for sure.
On that note, I think that's a good place to wrap up. We covered a lot of different things, and you guys provided a tremendous amount of insight. I'm very happy to have you on. I think our listeners will really enjoy it. And just as a little note, thank you guys for bearing with me. I know I don't sound my normal self today, but dealing with a little bit of a throat issue, but we got through it. And I think this will make for a fun episode.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much for your time and the opportunity.
Yeah, thank you, Zeke. This was great.
Thanks for listening, everybody. And thanks again to 1-4 Group, our sponsor. Be sure to go check them out at 1-4group.com.